Stay tuned after this episode to listen to me on the Princess Pod.
This episode of the Nerdball Podcast is sponsored by Jake Paluski at Real JP Multimedia. He does the music for this podcast. He has produced this podcast. If you need anything audiovisual done, he is the man to see at realjp.com, R-E-E-L-J-P.com. Let's start the show.
Hey guys, this is Ryan Dunlap, and you're listening to the Nerdball Podcast.
This is the Nerdball Podcast with Lorenzo Melcher.
Awesome. All right, Ryan, thanks for coming out here. I should also thank your ride for getting you out here.
Yeah. Shout out to Lyft.
appreciate you, man. It's we talked about it for a while, and you lived, and when we first started talking about it, you lived in Florida. I'm still working out because this is all, obviously it's a podcast, so it's all sound, and I don't like the way calls sound on the podcast, but I'm going to have to get over it because I can open up a whole wide range of people to interview.
And what I don't understand is, like, somebody is getting these good calls and, like, good Zoom quality, but, like, you'll watch ESPN, who is a billion-dollar corporation, and sometimes, like, their guys are working through, like, a 2004 webcam, it looks like, and the sound is awful, and you're just like, they couldn't get you a camera? Like, you're on every day.
Yeah, I know. And that's what a lot of these people do, especially the ones who podcast together. I'm assuming, I don't know, like, they have a setup at their house, but they're also on Zoom, but they don't use the Zoom audio.
Been working, and I'm gonna try to work a little harder in the next few weeks with a friend of mine and figure out some of the stuff with the Zoom audio quality.
Oh, okay.
As well as like OBS stuff. So if I get a lockdown, man, I'll help you out with
that. Man, yeah.
So I've been trying to get that stuff figured out for doing like lives and stuff.
Oh yes, yeah,
that still is very much a thing. Like, the pandemic opened up that door, and then that door closed, but it didn't slam, I don't feel like. Feel like it closed if you don't have good sound and you're sitting there with a cell phone doing it. But if you can produce a quality product and you're playing good, like, people will listen because they can listen in their car or whatever, and it doesn't sound like crap.
Yeah, and that's and like I said, some podcasts I listen to a lot every day, and some of them I'll turn off. Or I'll skip if it bothers me, like the way it sounds.
Right.
And some of them, they're just really good where it doesn't matter what they sound like.
But that, to your ear, just in general, I mean, you've been listening to the radio, let's say, for however long.
Yeah.
You don't want to hear stuff that's just subpar quality. It's just like when you downloaded music illegally, you threw away the ones that sounded crappy.
Yeah.
You just didn't keep them.
And I think it's gotten more like I need it to sound perfect because everything has gotten so much better technology-wise. Yeah,
and it's available. It's like, it's not necessarily free. Like, there are free programs and things, but you can get it at a budgeted price. It's not like even 10 years ago where you had to have $5,000 to get started. You can get started and going pretty good for like $500, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's why there's a lot of people doing all kinds of stuff, which is good, you know? So you and pardon my high school ignorance, were you into music when we were in high school?
I mean, I always loved music, but no, I didn't play. I bought a guitar when I was like just about to start my senior year.
Okay.
And then I played it for like 2 weeks and it was like hard. And dude, I didn't have money for any lessons or anything that. And like YouTube, what year did YouTube even start? Like,
I
don't even think it existed. And if it did, like,
pretty new.
You weren't watching hours of videos on YouTube and stuff. Like, there just weren't lessons available the way that there are. Like, any kid today that isn't doing something they want to do is like, dude, you just don't want it. You don't actually want to do it because you can learn anything right now to at least get some kind of fundamental and take it off, like, go with it. I feel like anybody that wants to do anything bad enough, they just kind of need the kickstart.
Yes. Or just somebody in there. Sometimes it's somebody in their life, a parent, another brother, sister, a friend, just to say like, yeah, that's cool, man.
Right.
You know,
totally.
Yeah. Just having support. So you were into music, but you didn't start playing. What made you want to, you know, start playing besides after the 2 weeks where it was hard?
Well, Well, I guess what made me even start like wanting to buy a guitar was I used to just write a lot of poetry. Like I just connected with that kind of stuff in school. And then my dad passed away when I was 15, and that kind of turned into a thing to deal with that. Like I wasn't dealing with that very well.
Okay.
My mom made me go to the support group, which was like eye-opening in a lot of ways. It was eye-opening that like, oh yeah, you probably are holding your stuff in too much and you need to like talk. And then it was also eye-opening in a way that some of these kids that were there were dealing with like so much worse crap than me.
Yeah.
And like as much as losing a parent sucks, there's people there that had lost both parents. Mm-hmm. There were people there that the reason they lost their parent was because of like a drug overdose, and they had just, their situation was terrible. Like,
yeah.
A very loving family, happily married parents, and my dad got sick. Like, that sucks. But so learning some of that kind of stuff, I think, helped too. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I just remember writing in there was a thing that they made us do. And that kind of transitioned more into like, I love music, I'm digging this writing thing. Like, how can I make it more of a thing?
Yeah.
So then, like, yeah, like 2 weeks, and then just never really touched it. Like, I'd pluck it every now and again. Like, and then
still there.
There was one of those Ohio storms. It would have been like that February or so of that same, like my senior year, so 2004 at that time. And we couldn't do anything. We had like level threes, and everything was kind of closed down. And so not only closed down for normal humans, like you're a high school kid, like your parents are definitely not letting you go do things in these conditions kind of days.
Yeah.
And after so many DVDs, like dating myself, so many DVDs and Xbox, I just was like, by day two, I was just like, what can I do? And I saw it sitting in the corner and just started like messing with it, like, remembered what the dude that sold it to me was like, this is a C or whatever, and just kind of kept like playing that and like moving my fingers like, this has to be something.
Yeah.
And then that just kind of started snowballing. Talked to a couple friends at school that played and was like, well, like, how did you do this? Or like I don't have lessons, what can I do or whatever. And somebody introduced me, Dustin Cavins introduced me to what a guitar tab was, and that like opened everything. And if you're listening to this and you don't know, essentially, a guitar tab is reading music for dummies.
Oh.
And it will show you the six strings on a guitar. And there's ways you can do this with a piano, too, stuff like that, or even a bass. It'll show you those six strings, and it'll simply just put a number, and that correlates with the fretboard. So it'll be like the E string, 5. That just shows you, you put a finger on the 5th fret of the E string.
Oh, okay.
It shows you all of that, like, instead of showing you like a music notation that you don't know, or like,
well, just, that, I mean, my kid's piano right here, it has like letters,
yeah,
but then it does show you on there like what, where it is, the music note, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, that is, especially like you said back then, that's an easy way to do it, and it got you going,
because once got me,
you
know, going,
even if it was like 1 hour, you're like, oh man, I can play this 4-note thing over and
then
over,
like, I just have an ear, like a lot of musicians, they hear it differently and it kind of clicks different. So it's, there's definitely some, oh, thanks God. Like, you got, like, I'm glad I can hear this stuff this way. Like, like, I know, you know, Jake very well. Like, he's not just someone that worked hard. He works hard, but it's just, it's in his head too. Mm-hmm. Like, it just clicks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm grateful that I have that too.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it was just hours and hours of trial and error and like trying to figure it out, and still I think the best guitar players in town are still trying to figure it out.
It's
kind of what's cool about it.
Yeah,
it's always like there's always more.
I do want to go back to when you said you're writing poetry. Is that something like you actively, your friends and people that you went to school with knew about you, or is that something you just did? Like,
I mean, there's a couple people that knew, and some people I would just like send stuff just to like bounce it off of them, because like I think I, before I picked up the guitar, I knew like, oh, I'm kind of writing songs without realizing it. Like they're coming around like to a chorus or something like that. So I would like send it to people on AIM, you know, get on some AIM conversations and say, hey, what do you think about this? Like, it's kind of cool. Yeah. And, yeah, there's a few people, but no, it wasn't like something that I was like, oh yeah, I'm this like songwriter or like poet. Like, check out my stuff.
Well, not even that, but just, you know, because some kids, especially being in high school, 15, 16, 17 years old, they don't want people to know that they do that stuff.
Right.
Because,
you know? Right.
Like you saying it, I had no idea.
Well,
you know, that you did that stuff. And maybe it's me. And again, you know, I apologize, but I just saw you as like a knucklehead.
Right. You know? And the goofy, clowny guy.
Yeah.
And I remember in my senior year of English class, this is kind of funny. I knew, like, I just already knew, like, with some of the stuff with my dad passing away and some of the stuff of just, I got sick at one point and also just being a knucklehead.
Yeah.
I just wasn't college, like, wasn't the plan at the time for sure. And certainly not like school. If anything, it was going to be like Owens or something.
Uh-huh.
So my senior year, I had started, just like the normal regimen of classes. And I had to do night school for a math class that I had to make up because my sophomore year with, like I said, my dad passed away. The day after he passed away, I was playing football with buddies outside just to like blow off steam.
Sure.
And I tackled a kid on a manhole cover.
Ooh.
And I like blew my knee out. So I had to have surgery like the next week. Like I was on crutches at his funeral.
Man.
It was just like one thing after another.
Sure, yeah.
So I missed like a quarter of school throughout that year. Like I thought everything was over with, man. And I was helping coach my cousin's softball team and took a baseball from a Colt League game to the back of the head, like coaching third base. I missed a week in the spring with a concussion. Like I just like couldn't even stand to be in a bright room.
Yeah.
I just felt terrible. So it was just like terrible year. So I'm like starting to make all of this time up and everything. And I went in after like a week and found out that my buddies were in this like remedial or whatever, just like we've called it like slow English.
Sure.
And I was like, shit, I don't want to do like all of this extra work. Like I already have this night school. I'm not going anywhere after this. Like it's not the plan. And I had heard that Miss Drew was like a difficult teacher. So that's who I had. So I was just like, sorry, Miss Drew, if you're listening. Cause she's a good lady. I actually,
sure, yeah.
I'm fortunate enough to know her through like some musical stuff or whatever, and like never through school.
Relationships change as you get older.
Oh, right.
You know, when you're 15, this person, you can't stand this person, or even your, you know, someone might not be able to stand their mom or dad,
right?
You know, but as you get older, it changes. You know?
Yeah. Right. So I went down to my guidance counselor and I was like, this is just going to be a heavy workload. And I just think maybe if we slid into this class. So I got swooped into like I said, like the slow English, basically just like all the knuckleheads that didn't want to do anything.
Yeah.
And then there's some intelligent kids there. Like my buddy Ben read a book every day. He was in the slow English class. Like, so one day we had like to do like a poetry thing, and she just like read a bunch of different people's, and like I don't even remember what it was about, but read mine, and everyone was just like, like, you did that?
Were you embarrassed at all?
I mean, I wasn't. I was just kind of like, yeah, that's what I do.
Okay.
Like, because I feel like for the most part, I've always just been. If someone did find out or whatever, I was like, yeah, that's what I do. Like,
I don't picture, I don't picture you as someone who gets embarrassed.
Yeah, just pretty comfortable in my own skin most of the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I try to tell kids that all the time. I'm coaching. Like, just be you, man.
And, oh, dude.
But it's such a simple thing to say, but it's so hard to do.
It's very hard to do. And I think especially in your world, like the football world is one that's definitely still like holding on to the macho side. But I think when people get older and look more, read more, they realize that the dude that's lining up next to you could be into like action figures or whatever. Like,
sure, yeah.
Just because they can smash you on Friday night or Sunday afternoon, whatever, like, doesn't mean that they don't have other interests and aren't intelligent humans. Like, just be you.
Yeah.
Like, I remember as a huge Notre Dame fan, they did the Showtime thing that was kind of like Hard Knocks a few years ago.
Yes, yeah.
And Jerry Tillery, who's in the NFL now, he's like this huge nerd, like molecular science guy, and just like off the field, like even listening to him talk, you're just like, you're a football guy. But like totally comfortable with who he was, man. And now he's getting paid stacks. I think he's playing for the Chargers. So, yes, kids, be you.
That's what because my son's 10 and he's into, you know, he was down here playing video games when we got here, and Minecraft, and me and him play Fortnite, and we both, you know, collect Pokemon cards together and all that stuff. I was like, man, I don't, I, as much as I, you know, he plays sports also, and, right. and obviously I would love for him to play sports, but whatever he does, I hope he likes it. But I was like, if I hope these interests can stay the same, like
right.
like together, just because you like Pokemon or reading comic books, or sometimes he, you know, every night he reads in his bed before he goes to sleep. You know, I hope because he does this stuff, doesn't it still lets him do this other thing?
Yes, you know? Yeah, 100%.
Because they can all go together, just like you're saying.
Yeah. For sure. And sometimes, like, the things that you like are outside of the main thing that you're doing yeah. are what's going to impact the main thing, like, in the most positive way, I guess. Yeah. Like, I love movies. And I feel like movies, watching movies, it'll trigger something. Like, someone else had that same idea that you're trying to get to, and they were able to kind of, like, put it out there and get that going, and you're not like stealing the idea, you're just like, oh, that's how I was feeling, and it gets that ball rolling yeah. to write a new song or whatever yeah. it may be.
That's right. I like so I watch TikToks all the time, and a lot of them are, I like there's one, this guy, he just puts like inspirational movie quotes and stuff, and mm-hmm. and I love like speaking, and so sometimes like there'll just be this movie quote, and then it, and then like I have to write it down. I'm like, oh, this would be like a good speech for a good beginning of a speech or whatever, you know.
Right.
So it's the same thing, like just getting ideas from other people.
Right, man.
You know? I mean, that's how everything, you know, a lot of people is like, oh, that's unique or that's my thing or whatever. Like, yeah, but somewhere along the line, something helped that.
Right. Yeah. For sure, man. I mean, and I think like, okay, so you're watching something fake like Pokemon or whatever.
Yeah.
But you can find a way to channel that into hitting someone on the football field. Like, sure. if you love it enough and you're yeah. like, oh, I'm getting that rage, or, you know what I mean? You can find little things.
Sure, yeah.
Sure, that's working for somebody.
So after high school, you know, you said that you knew school wasn't for you after that. What was, did you have a plan like when you graduated? Like,
oh no, I was totally terrible. Zero yeah. plan. I mean, I'm still terrible at having a plan to some extent.
The plan was just, I know I'm not school.
Right. right. School the plan at that point was not thinking about the future at all.
Yeah.
And having fun and
sure.
working terrible jobs. Like,
what were some of the jobs you worked?
Oh man, I sold shoes at Shoe Carnival.
Really?
That was a great time. I've washed dishes a yep. few different times.
Sure.
Awful. I mean, I attribute that to like terrible back problems that I have now for like doing that for too long.
Well, yeah, because you're tall,
hunched
dude.
Over these yeah. terribly low sinks.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, man. I did a lot of different stuff, and then I mean, some of them weren't even terrible. They were just like, they weren't what I wanted to be doing.
Yeah,
like, they weren't. Yeah.
Sometimes those not. I mean, those okay jobs are made better by people who you work with.
Well, yeah, and like so, like some of the jobs, like the job, I just didn't enjoy. Like I liked the job, I didn't like the atmosphere or something. Like I okay. cooked for a while, and I actually like loved that. It was
oh,
just
nice.
All of the other like BS that went
sure.
with that was not really all yeah. of that enjoyable.
Yeah. That's I washed dishes when Biagi's first opened. I was a dishwasher there, and it was so much fun. You know, just because we're just in our own corner. It's me and my. There was like two other dudes I worked with, and it was cool just being back there. And,
right.
You know, you know, people bring dishes by. Sometimes we say, "Hey, can you bring us some bread?" You know, we're hungry back here or whatever. You know, but it's cool just to be in there, listening to music, talking. You know,
oh, yeah.
I think one of the guys, he at the time, you know, when people were burning CDs, he burned me quite a few CDs. You know,
okay.
He's like, "Oh, this new one came out. You want that one?" I said, "Yeah, man." And
so I sure do.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a cool, you know, like I said, if you can make and I'm a people person, I can make friends with a lot of people. But if you can take like, "Hey, this job isn't the greatest, but I get to work with these guys or whatever."
I will say, and to that point, like, it's terrible of a job as something like washing dishes is. Because you're, especially in the winter, you're getting splashed with water. There's like no way to avoid
yeah.
not walking outside wet and cold. To that point, it's like you're getting paid to do to wash dishes.
Yeah.
It's like the most mindless thing. Like you said, throw on some tunes, yep. just kind of chill out. Like everyone else is running around stressed, and you're just like, oh, let's scrub this pan. And
you're like,
Julie's crying in the corner because the people at table 8 were mean to her. Like,
our biggest problem is, man, I wish that we'd stop this cheese dish because
it's, right. really, it's really, really getting difficult to get off there. When did we switch from Dawn? What is
You know, the one complaint I did have is I wasn't a smoker, so I never got breaks.
Oh, dude.
So I would go in the back and just sit there with smokers and like, what are you doing here? I go, I want a break too. Just because I don't smoke doesn't mean I don't get a break.
Man, when I was cooking, that used to drive me absolutely insane. Scott Januzzi, if you decided to listen to this today, it used to drive me absolutely insane when you would go smoke.
It was like, man, all these people getting free breaks, and I'm just sitting back here. Like,
oh, man. Yeah. Oh, they would, like, call in from outside. Hey, what is that? Like, why don't you put your cigarette out and come in and find out? I'm getting slammed right now.
Yeah, no kidding. So working these jobs, and are you still, like, working on music, too, and writing music and stuff at the time, or not really, just a little bit?
Well, I was, and that was, like... Like I said, I didn't even start playing a guitar until closer to 18 than 17.
Yeah.
And was figuring it all out. So it took me like a year or two to even have knowledge, have songs enough to try to go play in front of people.
Yeah.
So I was, but I wasn't. Like, okay. That point in time, I was the annoying guy that had his guitar always. And
yeah. The guy in the movies, you're like
sitting in the corner somewhere, and
Ryan's here with his guitar.
Yeah. And that was actually what was the coolest is, I guess that gave me the confidence to understand that I had something good enough that I could go do that, because at a point pretty quickly it turned from, oh man, who's the guy with his guitar, to, you know, it's 1:30. Ryan, get your guitar out. We want to hear you play. Like,
or I hope Ryan's here.
Yes. Yeah. It did start to turn into that. And that was kind of cool.
Yeah. And it's a good feeling.
That was something that helped when I first started to get gigs. Like, I almost had like a built-in following or people that could go out and make a bar think like, oh, this dude can bring some people.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when I was playing. I used to play a lot in BG when I was like, of BG age.
Yeah.
I think once you get to about like 25, you should probably stop heading to Bowling Green, Ohio, unless you're there for some kind of business.
Yeah, we went there yesterday, but we just had breakfast, so.
Right. Well, right. So playing at those parties, like I talked Beckett's Burger Bar into letting me come in and play a couple of times, and then that turned into a weekly thing for me, because I would have so many friends that had places and stuff that lived down there that I had gone to their house party or whatever and played for an hour at the end of the night when everyone was hammered.
Yeah.
And then I was like, hey, you know, excuse me, I'm playing at Beckett's tonight. Why don't you guys come there?
Yeah.
To get hammered. And I mean, I was filling that place up like pretty regularly on, was Monday nights for a little while. And then it turned into, I was there every Wednesday night. They did taco margarita thing.
Oh,
and
nice.
It like turned into a thing for a year and a half there. And then it got like, I was doing better, just getting better gigs, because that was fun and it was good, but it just wasn't paying very well, to be perfectly honest.
Sure. But that's, you know, that's what I learned doing stand-up comedy. Like, hey, if you can, a part of it is, you know, you're good at what you do.
Right.
But another part of it is you bring people. And obviously bars want that, and comedy shows want that. They want people there. So that's, you know, that's what helped me get a few shows, is like, hey, Lorenzo's going to bring people.
Yep.
You know.
And I, to a point, and it's not necessarily a good thing, that's like bringing people means more. Like, I was told, I guess doesn't even apply to bringing people, but like talent, I guess, doesn't necessarily matter. Like, if you're god awful, nobody's going to hire you, but people are willing to take a less talented person at times than they are have talent for whatever you might offer them. Like, if you're going to bring 50 people and you suck, compared to someone's going to bring 15 people, they don't really care.
Yeah,
it's about making money.
Well, it's like, it's just like those YouTubers that get shows,
right?
Or get, you know, they get to go to this arena. It's like, what are you doing? How does that translate to like being in front of people? It's, but there's going to be 40,000 people there.
It's very, very interesting. And that's, I had a conversation with somebody during the pandemic that was a similar podcast like this, that was, I brought that point up, that was talking about what's going to happen. All of these people have learned a lot, and people have blown up like overnight sensations from YouTube. But like you said, it's a lot different sitting in your bedroom than it is stepping on stage. And when you're in your bedroom, unless it was alive, you have no idea how many takes it took you to get that performance.
Yeah.
Like, so what is it going to be like? And yeah, I'm interested to see how that's been. I haven't seen anybody bomb. I haven't seen anybody succeed. So I don't know what it is.
I'm sure that happens because there is some, and because I listen to comedians podcast and they talk about this YouTube person who went up at the Comedy Store. And he wasn't a comedian, but he's popular, and he goes up there and tries to tell jokes, and is just—he's not a joke writer.
He's just
this thing just on YouTube.
Just because you're funny doesn't mean that you, like that. Your world of doing that is totally different. Like, I know I'm a funny guy. I can be in the moment. I can put crack jokes, but can I write? I've never really tried it. I don't know. It's a different thing. Yeah. So to see that, I'm sure, has got to be just like. Hideous at times.
yes. It's like, hey man, this ain't an open mic,
right? You
know, but man,
and yeah, and they're like you said, they're like the Comedy Store or something. And yeah. It's just like, okay, this is fair.
so I know you ended up in Florida, but how long into this did you end up down there?
Oh, a while, man. I would say probably I did, like I said, like the BG thing. I was doing a couple of hookah bars, coffee houses, like the shout out to the Flying Joe in Lewis Commons. Okay. Stop in there if you're listening. They were huge at getting me, like, that was probably my first, I would say, like, gig. And
okay.
That was, I was probably 20, maybe 21. I can't remember. Nice. I know a friend of mine, I think it was 20. I think it was my friend's 21st birthday party. It was going to be like that day or something.
Uh-huh.
And they gave me my first shot. And then that started to be pretty regular. I would go in there and play for like tips and some coffee. Like it was nothing, but it was like big time to me.
Yes. Yeah.
And it helped a lot, taught me a lot. And so that went on for a little while and did, like I said, like the hookah bars and stuff out. There's a place called Maxwell's Brew.
Mm-hmm.
It was right on Bancroft, like near the campus.
Oh yes. Yeah.
And that taught me a lot. That was like my first paying gig and it was a regular thing on Sunday nights. And it was also like a get screwed over pretty frequently kind of thing. And like,
damn,
deal with like some nights, everybody thinks you're like a god because you can play Wonderwall. And some nights, like it's these kids that are just like, it's like, for no reason at all, it'd be like emo night in there. And like nobody wanted you to play anything that I knew. It was just like at the time you'd get from like, but now it was like such a great learning experience and helped me to understand like how that can be anywhere. Like I played a gig the other night that I've played, I don't even know how many times, and has just always been great. It's been great tips, great interaction. And just that night, like, and I sounded good. Like some nights when you don't.
Sure.
When you're not having your night. And I sounded good. And I was just like, I can't explain this. Like, I just want to go home so bad right now. And it's just, that's the nature of the beast, man. Yeah. Especially when you're doing the covers thing, that is different than when you're going out. When you're going out and playing your own stuff.
Yeah.
Either you're playing your own show and people came to see you. Like, they know your music. They want to be around you and listen to you, the songs that you've written. Or you're opening for somebody, and as long as you're not bad, people are going to engage because they came to a show to watch music. Like, they want to see it.
Yeah.
So they're going to watch, and they're going to be polite and nice. When you're doing the covers thing, you might have your friends or whoever that came out to see you, but people don't go to certain places necessarily for that. They went there to enjoy dinner with their date or their family, and you might just be annoying more than you are anything. And in a different setting, you could have been like their favorite artist, but when they're trying to talk about grandma's birthday coming up that they're trying to plan, and you're like, they just don't care. So learning that from Maxwell's early on and like not thinking that, okay, every night's going to be like people are into it and engaged. Like that was probably a good thing. So,
and it was always when we would do open mics, I'd go around to Toledo just do open mics, and like there'd be newer mics, and then the person running would be like, all right, well, some of you, probably a lot of you are not aware, but we are going to be having an open mic here. And in my head, I'm like,
Yep.
But that's, you know, until it gets established, that's what happens.
That's just how it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then people begin to know, like, don't go there Tuesday because they have open mic.
Yeah.
Or people consequently know we're going there because there's open mic.
Yeah.
When it first starts, some of those, that's very interesting. I remember we were on tour one time and they came out, like somebody kind of came out and was like moving stuff around and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, we have a band, they're in town. And like this place had just like never had live music, you could tell. And we didn't know, like when you go on tour, you find the areas that you're going to go through and you just kind of contact people because you're trying to fill a date. And it probably, this place like had something like us one other time, someone wrote a Yelp review that was like the live music was great. So we were like, oh, they have live music, you know, like, cause that's how Google like associates things. And oh man, it was just like, it was so bad. Like everyone in there was just like, I mean, it was like an acoustic trio. Like it wasn't drums kicking in and everyone in there. I was just like,
nah, not here, bro.
We're really trying to enjoy our like $35 prime rib right now and not listen to you, you kids and your racket.
Dang.
Yeah, that happens, man.
Sure, yeah. Who'd you tour with, or how often have you done that?
I've been around several different times. Okay. And that one that I was talking about was like the most extensive one that I did, and was like our own like headlining kind of tour, air quotes for the folks at home there. And that was crazy. That was with Addison Schmidt, who's a local guitar player, songwriter, and Jess Kewen, who has been in bands, trios, duos with me for a while. Yeah. She's a singer around here that saw me. I was supposed to do an album release party at Bar 145 and for my second album. And it like, I've been promoting it for like weeks,
sure,
maybe even a couple months. And at like 4 o'clock that day, I get a call and they're like, hey, so we kind of need to cancel your party.
What?
And I was like, what? I was like, I've been advertising for you. I was like, I was on the news for you guys, like telling you that it's going on. And they're like, well, you can still play, but your band can't play because we just aren't going to have the room. And I got booted out of my own album party, I guess. Like I said, I did still get to play because Rusted Root came. And played, like their gig got canceled a couple hours north in Detroit. And they work with I don't know how closely they work with, but they're involved with and definitely donate to Project I Am,
okay,
which is in charge of the Acoustics for Autism, which is an awesome event.
Yeah
And they know, or somebody knows Nicole, the head of that, and she didn't have any way of knowing that there was an album party there or whatever. And they were like, our show got canceled, we have an open date. And they like collaborated some event that went to Project I Am or some of the proceeds so that they could still play a show, and the tickets so like last minute. So it was cool that they still let me open.
Sure.
But ultimately, because Rusted Root was there, my friend and collaborator now, Jess, came out with one of her friends, heard me and was like, I want to sing with you. Oh, and then nice. We sang and our voices just click like really, really well. Yeah, so
that's awesome.
The three of us went on tour and it ended up being like 23 dates in 25 days or something. Oh, wow. Like that. Like nice. We went everywhere from Ohio to Kentucky, Tennessee, Indiana, Illinois, we went all the way up to St. Paul, Minnesota.
Wow.
It was awesome. That's a real cool. Good time, man.
Yeah, I bet. Just to have some friends and drive around and play music.
Like, yeah. Built a lot of fans from that, like on Facebook pages and stuff. Yeah. And then had plans to go do something again and like everything else, because that was 3 years ago now. Like,
okay.
COVID hit.
Yeah.
Just kind of derailed everything.
Did she go to Pearsburg too?
She did not. She's an Anthony Wayne graduate. Oh, okay. And then Addison went to Sylvania Southview.
Oh, okay. All right.
So all over the area.
Yeah, yeah.
But that, cool.
Yeah, that's cool too, because it's when you're out and about, just like when I was doing comedy or even coaching and going to coaching clinics and just interact with new people and meet new people and, hey, how do you do this thing? Or for football, when you have this in practice, what do you guys do? Or how do you do this drill and stuff? And just learning from different people from different parts. It doesn't have to be parts of the country or the world. It can just be different parts of the city.
Dude, right. Like, because everybody, I mean, you learn that when you become friends, when you start to intermingle even at college age and stuff, like just people's traditions or how they did things in your from a town away that you didn't know because you didn't know. You didn't go there.
So you're touring around, playing shows, playing, you know, with friends and everything. And so how did you...
Yeah, that was, I guess I got off track there. I started to really get into, the bar scene and start playing a lot more when I was probably, 25, 26.
Is it mostly just by yourself?
By myself a lot.
Okay.
And then within that next year or so, that's when... And at times I'd play with Justin Marchand.
Yep, yep.
But he's just so busy with his career and his army at home.
Yes, he has so many kids.
Yeah, so we would do stuff periodically. And there's other people that I would sit in with or they would come sit in with me, but just kind of one-off stuff. And her and I started doing a lot of duo stuff together for a while. And eventually, just from playing in the bars, that snowballed into meeting more people and getting a band and playing quite frequently around. And I guess what kind of happened was I would be so busy and playing around a lot in the summertime. The winter came and crashed everything every year. And I just hadn't, at least at the time, figured out how to kind of blend the two of staying busy and saving money and all of that stuff. And I had friends that moved to Florida and were like, there's so many places to play here. And frankly, there's just not a lot of good people that we're seeing. And they're right. It's not even that a lot of them are bad necessarily, at least where I was. It's just a lot of older people because people have moved themselves and then start playing. So it's kind of like your uncle that can play guitar well or whatever. Yeah. It's not the most engaging thing. It's just someone that can play and they're like, I bet you can get in here. And they're right. I moved down there and kind of scoped it out.
When'd you move down there?
What year is it now? 21. So it was 2016.
Okay.
Or something that. I started going down there and just kind of started slowly getting my foot in the door. The first time I went down, it was 4 months or whatever. Uh-huh. And got a bunch of gigs, came back to the summer. And then I left in October that time. And really started doing it. And then the past 3 years, I've lived there.
Yeah.
Back and forth, I guess 50-50 almost.
Okay.
But had a place and kind of, because I was renting a room and stuff from friends down there for a while. And then was just I figured out where I could do intervals of 2 or 3 weeks up here, stay busy enough, and then go back and keep my, because what would happen when I was just trying to do the snowbird thing was, every time I would leave, I would have to almost reestablish myself because I was gone.
Oh, really?
I couldn't keep any weekly things or bi-weekly things because I was gone too long. And then there's so many people moving there. If you're not there, your job is someone else is just going to come get it because there's so many people moving there. So, I was down there for a couple of years doing the back and forth hard, full back and forth. And then for 3 years had a spot and was doing back and forth every 2 or 3 weeks. I never officially was a Floridian. I never gave up my Ohio citizenship or anything, actually, if you will. Residency is the word I guess I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But was definitely down there more and had things going real well. And
is it
COVID.
Yeah. COVID. Do you play any differently than here?
No, and I was really nervous about that when I first started going there because I don't want to play Jimmy Buffett and reggae. I like reggae music, but I don't want to play 3 hours of reggae music. You know what I'm saying? So, and I knew that was going to be big, island kind of music. And I was really nervous when I first went down there. And a lot of the places that I play, man, would be dude, don't do that. We have that guy on Tuesday, we have this on Friday. We want you to be our guy that plays the stuff that you're playing. Keep doing what you're doing. So that was cool. I would have a couple of places that would say can you do this a little more or whatever, and usually I would say yeah and just not.
You didn't want to?
I just don't the cover game to a point is understanding that you're playing covers and knowing your audience, and it is. But at the same time, is like the artist inside of you that will just, yeah. at least me, that will go absolutely crazy if I'm not putting, you know, half or so of the things that I want to do in there.
Yeah.
And then probably I would say 3/4 of that other half making things like I'll play what you want, but I'm going to do it like the way that I want yes. it, I guess. Yeah. Like I've never had any interest in, and I will say to some of the people that I've played with out there listening, possibly, I have come to realize and understand the importance of learning things like the proper way and like mastering a solo the exact way the guy played it or whatever. I have understood and grown up to understand that there is importance in that. But to me, like, I just don't have any desire to go play things like straightforward, like learn the cover, every note. I don't see the point. One, I shouldn't say never. There's a couple of bands that I've heard that'll do it and cover it straightforward and they kill it. But I've very rarely felt anything when I've heard that done. Like,
yeah.
Because I'm just usually so in love with the original way that if you don't flip it on its head a little bit and you try to cover it straightforward, when I hear like the vocal come out or something, or the guitar tone, like you're playing the notes, but the tone is different. It's just like, it doesn't do it for me. Like, yeah. I just don't get it. So if I can't get my head wrapped around someone else doing it, like, I'm just, it would feel almost conceited to me to think that I could be the guy that's going to do it the note for note and going to make people love it that way. So I don't know. It's been working for, when I think back now, like, I've been getting paid for probably 15 years and like made it a full, this is all I do job for like 8 years now. Awesome. It's like somebody's liking the way that I'm doing it. So I just try to have the confidence that they're going to keep liking the way that I'm doing it.
Well, I talked to Jake about playing covers because he does that a lot.
Right.
And what I noticed with him is he's, and I'm sure you do, you get a lot too, like just requests and stuff. And he's pretty like adamant about like you can tell me your requests, that doesn't mean I'm going to play it.
Oh, I know? Tell people every night, I'm like, I'm taking requests, granting them sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess like sometimes I'll go for it. It depends what kind of crowd I have, whether I feel like I can joke around with them or not. Like, just because I know the song does not mean that I'm going to play it either, because they'll come up and they'll be like, how do you not know that? And I'll be like, I do. I just am not in the mood. Like, yeah. I don't want to play. Like, if I never played Brown Eyed Girl in my life again, like, I'd be happy. And usually I just won't. And I'll tell them, I'll just be like, no, I don't want to do it. But there are those nights where you'll get a lady or a guy and whatever. Like, it's usually a lady on Brown Eyed Girl that you can just tell. You're just like, she genuinely wants to hear it. So I feel like that's a song, like, people request it just because they like
know it
and they know that it's like a guitar guy song. Oh, I'm gonna request Brown Eyed. Sometimes you can just feel, you're like, that, like, it, like, that lady really likes that song. Well, she listens to it in her free time.
Yeah, yeah. It's her ringtone.
She likes that song.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to let that person down.
And I think it's when I hear Jake say that, those things to people, that usually it's where he plays on a weekly basis, so people know him and everything.
Right.
And it doesn't happen quite a bit. But I also see where I'm like, hey, here's a 20, play this song. Okay, you got it, man.
Dude, man, there's few exceptions where if you throw money in my bucket, I will not fake it till I make it for you. At the very least, I will throw it in the chorus into something else. Like,
oh, sure,
we are whores that way for sure. There's no like real way to sugarcoat that. I don't feel like it's just what it is.
I went to Jake and Tim Bauer played a Dueling Pianos a couple years ago. Like, now they do it quite often, right. But it was like their first one at I forget the bar, but it was down. It's right behind on the outfield of Mud Hens Stadium, right on the corner where that turf field is too. I think it starts with an H.
Fleetwoods,
yes. So they were there, and it was like one of their first ones, packed bar. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it like that before, and they got so much money for people fighting over playing the Ohio State fight song and the Michigan fight song. So when they'd start playing Ohio State, a Michigan fan would come and pay him to stop. Or the other way around. And it was, I'd never seen it like it was, I was losing my mind.
It's hilarious that you say that because, like I said, there's very few that I won't do. And I don't like Michigan. I don't, I'm a Notre Dame guy. I don't like... I would say the Ohio State fans have been far more annoying in my life in recent years, but like I never play Ohio State. We will next year, but like Michigan, that's been throughout my lifetime a game and a rivalry. That so I just don't like Michigan. And some girl asked us to play Hail to the Victors on Friday night. And I was like, no, I'm not doing it.
Oh, really?
And she was like, really? We'll put $10 in there. And I was like, I don't need money that bad. And she walked away, screamed F you, and double flipped me off. And I was like, well, that's going to not get it. So then we played Hang on Sloopy for her.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, it was a good time.
I enjoy live music. One thing I've never been a concert guy. I think I've been to like three concerts in my life.
Okay.
But
some
I like,
people just aren't like, yeah. That's like my therapy. I love it. Like, and sure, some people like my girlfriend, she'll go, she has a good time when she gets there. It's not her thing. Like she does, like I wake up like it's Christmas morning. She gets pumped when the music finally starts. Like it's two different vibes.
But I do enjoy, like, if I'm out to eat somewhere, or we'll go at least a couple times a month, we'll go see Jake play. Cause the kids really enjoy watching him play music. But I can get down to that. Like if we're somewhere, someone's just playing like a guitar with no, like it's just instrumental, you know, it's all that stuff. I like that setting.
For sure.
You know, but just not, I don't know.
Being 20,000 people crammed together.
Yeah, and, I mean, I can do it for a sporting event, but just, I don't know. I like music, just not enough to do that, you know?
I mean, I think, and this is just me getting inside of your head. I think your problem is when you go see somebody at a concert, it is, let's say 20,000 people or whatever. Sure. So you can't feel as connected. Like you'd probably have a blast seeing somebody at a place like the Ark in Ann Arbor. It's like 200 people. You sit down, you watch it. You're like actually engaged with the artist. Mm-hmm. It's tough to engage with the artist the way that you can watching us kind of local guys do our thing when there's that many people around you, like, and that takes away from your experience with the music and like feeling connected to it.
Well, all the bands that I've seen, it's music that I listen to with my friends. Like I went to the Taste of Chaos tour, which was fun. I had a lot of fun, but I mean, everyone's up front going crazy. I was in the back just cause I wanted to hear, you know?
Right.
I went to Dashboard when they were at BG, you know, but that one wasn't as bad because it's Dashboard,
right?
You know, it's not like it's screaming around, you know, all that kind of stuff. So people are sitting watching something as opposed to moving around, you know?
Well, and even like Taste of Chaos, that was it. Like the Sports Arena or Huntington Center or something like that. Probably would have been more fun for you at like headliners. It's like a fraction of the size. Yeah, so you're like, even with all the chaos, like you're still not feeling like an ant. Like,
Well, I saw Stray Light run at a very small place by UT. I don't remember what it was called, but that was cool. It was fun because there wasn't a lot of people there. But I knew all the songs they were playing, you know?
I'm like love this songwriter. His name's Rustin Kelly. And
I think you, when you post about him, that's how I learned about it.
I
started listening to his dirt emo.
I went and saw him in Detroit, and quite frankly the sound sucked. Like I think one of the speakers at the venue was like,
oh really,
blown. Like it kept, and it was such a better show, like experience wise than I went and saw him a week later in Nashville at the Ryman.
Yeah,
and we had great seats both nights, and it was like we had a blast. We had a great time.
Sure.
But of the three shows that we saw, the one where we were like in an intimate setting was like so much better. It just was.
So are you back here living full time now?
I am. Surprise. I just actually got a place I'm gonna be moving in Maumee.
Nice.
So I'm going to enemy territory, which is
That's all right.
I'll be moving in like a week, actually.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations.
So, you know, staying up here for a little while, suffer through the cold, and get through it together. It's just, there's a lot of different variables that changed and most of them are COVID related.
Yeah.
One of the big things that happened was I'm obsessed with my dog. Anybody that knows me, I like love him, and he's totally a companion for me.
Yeah.
And he traveled with me everywhere. And then the was it FAA or FCC or whoever
for the airlines.
I think so. Yeah. They changed the law. Like, it wasn't like at first I thought it was like maybe like an airline rule change.
Yeah.
And like the actual law changed because he's an emotional support animal and I can't fly with him. The only things that can fly now are service animals, like true, like $20,000 service dogs, which sucks because I trained him like a lot and like he's flown several times. There was a time in the airport where a canine dog was like going crazy, aggressively barking at him, and he just sat there, like looked at the dog, looked at me, and was like, "You can't do that here," like, and just like kept going. Like, he's never been any trouble. Would just get on the plane, crawl under the seat for the flight, and then they changed that law. So just like traveling with him, I had friends that moved. So, like, I didn't have anybody that could I could trust with him. Like, the only other person that I really, like, trust down there with him is allergic to dogs, so she wasn't going to be able to, like, put in 2 weeks where, like, it's one thing if I was gone for a weekend, he can survive, like, but, and then I just didn't want to be gone from him. So played a factor, and then a love played a factor, got a pretty serious girlfriend up here, so.
Yeah.
It all just came full circle, and it's, like, it's... That is what it is. Missed family from being gone. And I think something that everybody can agree on, or they should open their eyes and agree on, is a lot of people on this planet have died in the last couple of years that we weren't necessarily expecting to die.
Yeah.
And when you're gone from your family, like, I could handle a Thanksgiving alone or eating with random friends or whatever that I met down there when COVID wasn't happening, but when all that stuff's going on around you and you're alone for that, like, that starts to open your eyes to what's a little more important than not being cold. Like,
you know what? You can, it can be 0 degrees outside, but it's really warm when you're with people that you love, man.
It's very warm when you're inside laughing and playing games and stuff. And So,
one other thing before we end this is, I think it was last year that you put a song, a video out about, and you were looking for people who died of overdoses.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Because I've, you know, everyone knows my brother passed away over a year ago now from an overdose. So I was, when I saw that, I jumped all over it because I thought it'd be really cool. How did that, how did you decide you wanted to do that?
Well, okay. So COVID, as awful as it has been, for a lot of people, there, I guess if you looked hard enough or worked hard enough, you found positive things in it. And a positive for me was everything came to the halt, stuff closed down, and like unemployment, like that wasn't gonna pop off. Luckily, I am somebody that reports my taxes. This is my job.
Yeah.
So eventually, I was able to get something, but at the beginning that wasn't coming and all of my work just gone. Yeah. I still had all of my same bills. I had already purchased like my, when I, normal times when I am booking, and I think most musicians agree, like I book out for like a year, like I'm already booked for stuff next December or whatever.
Oh, awesome.
So if it's going to be out of town, like I'm going to be playing for a party in Austin in October, I will buy my flight typically pretty soon, and I'll buy like my year's worth of flights and just know what my schedule is for bigger trips like that. So I had flights and everything, like I had spent a bunch of money and was like, what am I going to do? Like the stimulus checks that they're saying aren't here. Like if I don't start making money in like, what I have, these savings are going to go quick. And at that point, that was somewhat panic because I also wasn't realizing that everything was closed. There's nowhere to spend any money. Like, it wasn't really going all that fast. It was kind of okay. So I started a business where you can get a hold of me. Anything you want is like what I always say. Like that's the tag, like anything you want. And I'll write a song, whether it be you want to tell your girlfriend you love her, a song for Mother's Day, like anything you want. The first one that I did actually when I posted the idea was this dude wanted a pre-apology to his fiance, wife, whatever she was, for when he was an idiot and did like dumb stuff. So, yeah, he sends me over like these things that he does. Like, apparently, he spends too much money on hunting and fishing gear and like plays Xbox too much or whatever. So then I turn those ideas and take them and write a song about it.
All right.
So that went like pretty well. Like, a bunch of people got them. And eventually, somebody that I knew personally, his mother, got a hold of me and was like, I want you to write a song for Al, but like, not so much for him. Like, I guess. We kind of talked, like, originally I think she was like, I want a song for Alex, and then we kind of started talking about it more and was more like, I don't even really want a song, like, about him. I want a song, like, about how he was a good person, and I know also that there's other people that are good people, and they're dealing with this, and we spitballed some stuff back and forth. And then she also did something that was very cool, which was, what I do is I try to tell people, like, 2 weeks, I'll have something back to you. Like, I could do it in an afternoon, probably.
Sure.
But if you give me a little bit of time, because how the idea really came about to begin with was, at my gigs, I would be like, okay, let's write a song, and throw me 10 words or whatever, and I'm going to turn it into a song.
Nice.
So, like, that was kind of how I knew that, like, I had that ability to do it at a rate. If people actually thought it was a good idea, because it's not good if you can only do it once a month or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
So I was like, I could get a good turnover. So she, instead of 2 weeks, she was like, take your time. I don't need this. Like, I'm not going anywhere. Take your time. So that was like really good for me. Like, let me think on it. And she also shared very personal letters with me that she had written in a support group that she attended that was like, let me see things from the other side. Like, I've had a few people pass away from overdose and suicide, which we kind of ended up putting this all together, just mental health awareness. And none of them were my child. So to see that and see some of the things that she had to say was very eye-opening. Mm-hmm. And it helped me write the song that you let your brother be a part of. And the idea was, and the song is called Just Got Beat. And that's something from sports that I always have kind of recognized with, like, that saying or idea. And I think you can connect with this. Sure. Like, sometimes, like, you just get beat. Like, sometimes, like, you play the game of your life and the other team plays the game of your life, yeah, and nobody's fault, you just get beat. And I kind of feel like that's the way that it is. Like, nobody that I know that died of an overdose, like, wanted to die. They didn't want to have that problem. So, like, when you hear on the news, they're like, they lost their battle to addiction or whatever. It's like, they didn't lose. You just got beat by it. Like, you were trying. And then we wrote that song. And since we had talked about that it was for more than just Alex, we came up with the idea together, like, let's make it for everybody and let's try to do something positive with it than it just be the song.
Yeah.
So we came up with the idea of, let's have faces attached instead of it just being like X amount of people have died of an overdose, a number, like, put faces to it, like, these are loved ones. And then we put the NAM hotline number in there to hopefully maybe somebody saw that video. Like, I haven't looked at it in a while, and I know the release date is coming up, so it'll come up in my all of my memories and all the stuff. I know the Facebook video version was like coming close to like 10,000 views.
Awesome.
Like, it's a lot of people that saw it and watched it, and maybe it helped somebody. Like, I know it helped the people that were pictures were in it. Like, I got a lot of positive feedback, and thank you for writing it.
My parents really liked it,
so that's cool. Yeah.
It's like you said, you can do all those things, but putting faces on things, it makes it more impactful.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, these are real people.
Right. You know? And I, like, selfishly, I was, like, grateful for it because it, like, I did know him. So it was an emotional thing to write, and, like, talking to his mom, like, having conversations with her a lot was, like, it was, yeah, it was difficult, but good difficult, mm-hmm. and a positive thing that came out of it. And yeah, I just still feel like it's a great song. It still has a for the end of time now. Like, that song was recorded because she did that. Like, she was willing to do that. So, and she actually, I had did the version like I always do for people, which is a more stripped down acoustic, like, quality's good. Yeah. You can listen to it and not really know the difference between that and a Spotify or whatever. But I don't play the drums or anything. I don't have like a studio.
Oh, got it.
So her and a couple of ladies from a support group that she's in actually put up half the money. And I was like, if you guys can get this much, I'll get in there and I would love to donate this to you guys or whatever.
Oh.
So that we could go to Firefly Studios in Toledo. And we, that's where the actual like nice quality with the drums and the, like you would hear on Spotify, that version, they made that happen. So
that's awesome. Can you send that to me?
Yeah. And yeah.
I'll put it at the end of this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for people, you know, that want to listen, where can they find your stuff at?
All over the place right now. I've actually, hopefully by the end of December, I'm going to have a couple of records that got taken down from Spotify from a dispute, which is funny. I know Jake was just having an issue with his stuff.
He was telling me about
that. Where what happened was when I set all of this stuff up, I mean, we're talking like 2011 or something.
Wow.
So, like, for my first record, so my card expired. Like, I had to get, like, when you get a new bank card whatever.
Yeah,
And I didn't use that same email, so my thing lapsed over, and I didn't even know that it was gone. Like, I don't listen to my own music, really. So somebody was like, hey, man, how come I can't listen to this song anymore? And I was like, I don't know. So I went on there, and I've just been in this battle because I'm trying to get, and I could put it on anywhere and put the music back up through a different service, but they have all of my, like, codes or whatever. Like, one of my songs, I was fortunate enough when I put my third record out to submit to a bunch of blogs and for reviews, because I don't think people realize, like, if you don't let people know that you're putting something out, like, we're not on labels, like, nobody knows to write about it. So you have to kind of like submit and see if anybody even cares to write a review for you. And I had a bunch of people do that, and then from that put me on playlist, and I had a couple of songs, specifically it's called Lost, had like 60,000 plays or something. So I want that to be shown if I replace it on like Discoid or something like that,
because
I use TuneCore. I won't, like, it'll be recognized as like new music. So I won't like have any of that stuff on there, any of those, which doesn't necessarily matter, but it kind of matters.
Sure,
like, I worked hard for that.
Definitely.
And when you're trying to like submit for like a future tour, it's gonna look better to have plays than it is to have minus a thousands next to like all the songs or whatever. So just the little things like that that are probably my own stupidity, but there is music on Spotify, and that record that I was talking about, you can get on Bandcamp and is available.
Okay. All right.
And then everywhere, YouTube.
I'll put links and stuff in the show notes too.
I've never successfully made anything go viral of any kind. And I put out a 12 Days of Quarantine song last year instead of 12 Days of Christmas. And I have no idea why, man. Algorithms or something. I looked this morning, like last year when I stopped paying attention to it at all to see where it was at, it got like 600 and some views. Uh-huh. And 3 weeks to a month ago now, this girl commented on it and was like, oh, this is hilarious. We're going to try to do this at our school pageant or whatever. And I was like, oh, cool or whatever. And I looked and I was like, oh, it says 6,000 views. Because I was like, why did this girl even see this video?
Yeah.
I looked this morning and it has 21,000 views and like still climbing. I've just never been viral before. So check me out on YouTube. Subscribe there.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. All right, well, thanks for coming on. Thanks again for that, for, you know, including my brother in that. It was awesome.
For sure,
and
man.
Like I said,
thank you for letting him. Like, I was nervous that people were gonna not like the song or something, or also just like not want to be a part of it. And everyone was just very, very supportive. And
well, again, you're just being you and wanting to do this thing for your friend's mom, and it's, I know it's helped people, even if it helped one person.
And that's kind of what we talked about, was like, I mean, like, what did we spend? Let's say we spent like $1,000. Like, you saved somebody's life. Like, somebody called, sure, got help, didn't pull the trigger, like, got off drugs because of that. Like, that's, if we did that, that's freaking, like, I can't even think about that, dude. Like, it, like, makes me, like, dizzy to, like, think about stuff like that. It's really, really, some of the messages that I was getting when that was coming out was just, like, I choked up, like, several times because, it was, like you said, I was just, like, I was playing music. Like, I was writing a song. It's what I do.
Yes. Yeah.
And then it, like, really positively impacted people. And it's, like, I can't imagine, like, I'm a huge Dave Matthews fan. Like, what that dude's mind has to, like, he has to have, like, spun himself out sometimes, like, thinking, because I just know so many people that his music's impacted positively that, like, that's got to be crazy. Like, I've done it on such a small scale. I can't imagine to do it at that level.
Yeah, yeah. It's great to be appreciated and to know that people get, you know, get something out of whatever you're doing.
Right,
you know?
Man.
So, all right, Ryan, thanks again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
And like I said, stay after this podcast. Pretty sure my daughter's gonna be on because she wants to come on like she normally does.
Awesome.
But to listen to that song, so thank you.
Go Jack.
Thanks to my guest today, Ryan Dunlap, for being on the podcast. It was cool to hear his journey from starting as a high school student buying a guitar and not doing anything with it to playing all over the city, now moving to Florida, playing all over there. Now he's back. Check him out, check the links out, check all his music out. He'll be around town. He's probably somewhere almost every night, so give a listen. Please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. It means the world to me if we can get this podcast off the ground and running. You don't have to share all the episodes. Just share one you like. One podcast, if you share one, could turn into a subscriber down the road. So any little bit helps. My Gmail is thenerdballpodcast@gmail.com. I'm on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Find me at Twitter at the Nerdball Pod. Instagram is the Nerdball Podcast, and Facebook is a page at the Nerdball Podcast. Thanks to Real JP Multimedia, Cuttlefish Graphics, Perrysburg Junior High STEM, and Big Daddy Graphics for helping out the podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Ladies and gentlemen, the Princess Pod with your host, Lillian. Lillian, how you doing?
Good.
Good. What do we got today?
Parade.
No, I'm just saying. What do you got to talk about today? What do we do all this weekend? Huh? What do we do? Who do we see?
Nico.
Yeah, who's Nico?
My baby cousin.
Yeah. Was it cool?
He's cute.
Yeah.
So cute.
You spent a lot of time with him and your other cousin too, huh? Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, I had.
No one can see. You got to talk.
I know. I have four cousins there.
Yeah, four cousins there. You're right. Yeah.
Dominic, Holland, Nico, Gabby.
Yep. That was a good time for Thanksgiving, huh?
Remember when Dominic and Gabby stayed at our house for like a bunch of weeks?
Yeah. Yep. That was fun too, huh?
Yeah. And remember Gabby made up a Cheez-It walk.
A Cheez-It walk?
Uh-huh.
Did you talk to her about that when you were there?
Uh-uh.
No, you should. That would have been funny.
She ate like a whole box of cheese for a snack. She loves cheese.
So what do you think your favorite part of the weekend was?
Seeing Nico.
Seeing Nico. What about, what are some of your favorite foods you had this weekend? Do you like any Thanksgiving food or do you like turkey?
Turkey.
Yeah, that was good.
And I had for Thanksgiving mac and cheese.
Yeah.
And potatoes with chunks I like for Thanksgiving. But yeah. I don't like mashed.
You don't like mashed potatoes. How come you don't like mashed potatoes? No.
How we played this game and you spin a wheel and rubber candy lands on, uh-huh. You have to eat that candy, and you do your poker face so you don't know what the other person said. The other person thinks if it's a trick or if it's a treat.
Oh, so it and could so be something bad.
Yeah, so and you put it under the table, under like a little like...
That mat or something?
Mat, yeah. And and you put the answer down, and they have to try to guess, and whoever guesses gets a point, right?
Oh. Who won? Or I think you all win, because you just get to eat candy the whole time.
True, and we weren't keeping count anyway.
We're just eating candy and playing, huh? Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
I like to eat the candy. Yeah. It was so good.
Good.
I love some of the candy, but I didn't like some of the candy. And the piano's down here, so I can practice the piano.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
I can play the piano.
Smooth segue.
Boop, 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 boop.
All right, what else we got going on?
Today?
Just in general. All right. Is that all you have to say?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll say goodbye to your listeners.
Bye, my little pretties and prince.
It took a little while for me to see that you didn't lose, you just got beat by addiction or sickness. I call it a disease. I know you didn't lose, you just got beat.
Just got beat.